Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. It's a supernatural news parish share Saturday here. And tomorrow, Susan Slaughter will join us from the new Travel Channel hit TV series, Paranormal Caught on Tape. We'll talk about some of the episodes, some of the strange videos. Plus, she's been a part of Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunters Academy, Ghost Hunters International, and Hipster Haunts. So we'll talk to her about her work in the paranormal field. That'll be tomorrow. Right here on Beyond the Darkness. Tim, we've got a lot of weird news to get to today. I think we've got about 11 or 12 stories, and I'm going to just kind of mix it up today. You'll read a story or two. I'll do a couple of para shares, but we want people to call in, share your stories. We miss your voices. Let us know that you're out there. We see how many downloads. We're getting over 125,000 downloads an episode. So give us a call, 651-300-4977. Stop being so shy.
Yeah.
Just pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Tell us your story. You have 3 minutes. It's not even like we're asking you to take us to dinner and hold our hands. It's just leave your story. Tell us your tale.
I like dinner.
Well, right. But, you know, they're not going to come by and tell us these stories. Unless you want to stop by Tim's house at 314.
I've got mobile equipment. We can meet anywhere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but maybe if they picked you up at your house, you wouldn't have to worry as much at 314.
I can meet them anywhere. I can bring I can put the mobile equipment in my unmarked van.
Whatever.
That says free candy.
You're just so antisocial.
Can I tell you a small story to start out supernatural news?
What's
it's actually
on?
Kind of funny. Our good friend Lee Kirkland got a hold of me. Lee Kirkland.
Our good what?
Our good friend.
Oh, a good friend. Lee Kirkland?
Yeah, Lee Kirkland.
Why didn't you just say that up front?
I did, Dave.
Oh, okay.
Wait. Is that thing on? Our good friend.
Maybe it'd be better if I just called you at 612.
No, Dave. No.
I thought maybe if I called that line, I'd have a better connection.
No.
Okay, so Lee Kirkland, our good friend.
I'm at a radio station. I would think that this thing works pretty well. It probably works better in my own setup at home.
Well, how quickly you forget. Do you remember iHeart Radio and what equipment didn't work there?
But this is a good radio station.
Oh, there we go.
So our good friend Lee Kirkland gets a hold of me this week and he says, "Hey brother, I might have accidentally tagged you in a post online and I'm going to copy in on the post. Well, they're starting this brand new non-paranormal festival down in Kentucky and it's called Kentucky Christmas Fest. And who doesn't love Christmas, right?
The Grinch.
Well, that guy, sure. But other than him, who doesn't love Christmas?
Ebenezer Scrooge. He's not a big fan.
Oh, okay. But other than him, who doesn't love Christmas?
I'm not sure that Hitler was a big fan either.
Oh, all right. Besides him.
Okay. I don't know anybody else then. They were the big three.
Right. Yeah. The Trinity.
The unholy Trinity.
The unholy Trinity of Christmas hate. So he said, I got this great deal where I'm bringing in a Santa Claus and here I'm featuring him in this post. And I think I accidentally tagged you. And I went, oh, okay. He said, but because Santa contacted me and he said, I'm not Tim Dennis. And I didn't know what he was talking about. So here I included the post so you could see what he was talking about. And here's all these wonderful pictures of Santa smiling and he's holding gifts. And it says, Kentucky Christmas Fest is with Tim Dennis. And it says, hey, Santa's going to come out and shake hands at Kentucky Christmas Fest and say hey to all the kids and give hugs and pose and give out free candy. And I said, well, if you book me, I'm available to give out free candy too, except for I'm standing next to a van with no windows that says free candy. I don't know so if that's as attractive.
Wait a minute. So was Facebook identifying you as Santa and tagging you automatically?
I don't know. Maybe.
Do you think it had anything to do with those girls you used to date in college?
It might have been.
Yeah, the ho-ho-hos?
Yes, the ho-ho-hos. There was actually three of them. And they weren't too reputable, if I remember right.
Not at all.
No,
not at all.
Yeah, but they're sweet girls. They got around and they loved everybody, as far as I know. Yeah.
As long as you had $20, they did. All right, Tim.
Yes.
Summer's here, and the time is right for dancing in the streets, but not for going out in the woods. I just sent you a story.
Yes.
And this is a story of nightmare proportions for me. Because I'll tell you, summer has sprung in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I go out the other day. There's one thing I do like to do is water my vegetable garden. I don't know why. It just brings me peace.
Sure.
I go out. I water my vegetable garden. I walk out of my yard the other day.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moth the size of my fist. And he's glaring at me with hatred burning in his beady little eyes, right?
Oh, my. Yeah.
I walk past. There are two mangy rabbit side-eyeing me.
Oh, my.
In the yard, right?
Yeah.
Again, disdain and disgust in their eyes.
Yep.
Two garter snakes. I almost didn't finish my job. All right, I'm not going to lie. I didn't finish my job. I may have dropped my hose and gone inside, Tim.
Well, I've
But it was before. Not a good day for me. There was just a lot of really angry-looking outdoor things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Tim, when I think it can't possibly get worse, this article comes to me via one of our listeners. Can you please share this?
Oh, boy, would I love to. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, Tim, might just start to prove more of my theory on the zombie apocalypse, because now it's affecting snakes, Tim.
Oh, Dave.
Now it's affecting snakes, Tim.
No, Dave. No, but I'll read it. Sure. Just to see the sheer terror on your face. Officials issue a warning about a zombie snake that tends to play dead. Play dead, Dave. That's what it does. Parks and recreation officials, not the ones you've seen on TV in North Carolina, issued a warning about a so-called zombie snake in the state that tends to play dead. That's right. It just lays there and plays dead. The North Carolina State Parks and Recreation shared images of the eastern hog-nosed snake. Well, sure, it sounds cute. On its Facebook page, warning residents to stay alert if they happen to come across a creature which defends itself by lying on its back and pretending to be dead. Mm-hmm. Instead of watching clouds to see if we can keep weekend weather on track, let's play a game, they said on the Facebook page. Who is this famous North Carolina snake? A cobra? A zombie snake? It's a harmless one, the organization wrote in a lighthearted Facebook post, which Dave then took his computer and threw it through a window.
So you saw that, did you?
I did, yeah. I think it might have hit somebody below.
Mm.
It racked up dozens of reactions and comments from residents, including a few who said they've never heard of a snake with such bizarre survival techniques.
Maybe it's like those fainting ghosts. Maybe the snake sees me and passes out. It's a fainting snake, just like the fainting goats. Yeah. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I believe so. I think you're onto something here. You're onto something or you're on something. One or the other.
I'm on something from time to time.
The reptiles vary in color, but the most common ones are usually brown or gray with dark brown blotches. It isn't poisonous, but they tend to display cobra-like qualities, according to Amphibian and Reptiles of North Carolina. Oh, this just gets better and better for you, doesn't it? When threatened, hognose snakes hiss loudly like this.
Ugh.
And spread their necks like cobras do, resulting in the nicknames Puff Adder and Spreading Adder. Amphibian and reptiles.
Wasn't that one of the hoes you dated in college?
Yeah.
Spreading Adder?
Spreading Adder. Oh, boy. And could she spread? Like peanut butter on hot bread.
Wow, oh, yep. That's wrong.
Yeah. Amphibians and Reptiles of North Carolina said in a statement, they rarely bite during these displays, So did spreading adder, if you know what I mean. But they may strike repeatedly. The eastern hognose tends to resort to playing dead when other defense mechanisms fail. I can barely speak myself right now. If the antagonist continues, the hognose snake will feign death by opening its mouth, rolling over on its back, and writhing around. So did spreading adder. If turned over onto its belly, it will immediately roll again onto its back, the statement said. The hognose, which can grow up to about 4 feet in length, well, that's a nice length, is found throughout the eastern parts of the country, from Florida to Texas to Minnesota.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mm. That according to the Florida Museum.
Hang on a second. Dear honey, I will not be attending any outdoor activities. Please take care of yourself and the children. I will be in the attic with my comic books and Pokemon cards. Your loving and terrified of zombie snakes husband, Dave.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. Urban myth says hognose snake can mix venom with its breath and is thus able to kill a person from a distance of 25 feet.
Come here. Take that. That's what I picture he'd be like, just huffing you from a distance.
Maybe from a distance. But the museum said that couldn't be further from the truth, Dave. That's not true at all.
Okay.
In truth, its breath is harmless, except for in the morning when it hasn't brushed its fangs. The museum said that in a statement. So don't worry. It can't huff and puff and blow your life away. That's not possible.
Ugh. What a nightmare, dude. Seriously.
Zombies.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It feigns death. It just lays there. Does it do the cartoony thing where it like opens its mouth and sticks its tongue out to pretend it's dead?
Yes, I believe that's part of it. Yeah.
Ugh.
It does the whole, and then it has like a little arm that comes out and it goes, oh my.
Really? They don't, I don't think they have arms. So that would be even more terrifying.
They grow one just to.
I got to worry about halitosis venom and zombie snakes. Ugh.
That is a great band name, by the way. Halitosis venom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Where are we going next?
Well, we can stick to the woods if you'd like. That sounds good. But
we're there. Why not just get it done?
Get it done. Like a shot to the behind. You're like, just get it done. I'll drop my drawers and you can... Throw the needle in my tuchus and we'll be done. Ghost picture shows a mystery girl staring at kids playing in the haunted woods. Anne Marie English thinks she's captured ghostly figures peering out from the trees in the screaming woods. The screaming woods is generally what happens when Dave finds a snake, actually. That's
anything in the woods.
Anything
get
in the
me
woods.
To that point. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. A freaked out mom claims to have photographed ghostly figures eerily watching her children playing in a haunted woods. Anne Marie English, who's 34 years old, has revealed the pictures taken of her four kids and her nephew around 3 p.m. on Saturday at the Screaming Woods in Kent. Screaming Woods. It's kind of catchy. Mm-hmm. Also known as Daring Woods, the county's most haunted place. The mom from Cheriton in Hampshire took the youngsters there to see if the spooky stories were true. Generally, when you hear a lot of spooky stories from a place, you want to just automatically assume they're true. Yeah. And when sifting through the pictures once home, Anne Marie made a sinister discovery. According to Kent Live, she thinks she can see a mystery girl peering out from the trees. I don't know. I see a lot of pareidolia there when I look at that picture. She said it was such a nice wooded area. It's beautiful. It wasn't until we got home and I was looking through the photos when I noticed the man standing watching behind the tree. I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. And then my cousin noticed the little girl in the tree. That's just a little girl looking at the kids playing. She probably died there at some point, she went on to say. My older children were more freaked out by it. We didn't see anything when we were there, and it was if it and it. Oh, this is confusing. And if it was anything sinister, it would have showed itself while we were there.
Mm.
Oh, you just assume sinister stuff shows up and goes, boo, and yeah. Sinister. No,
it hides. That's why it's so sinister.
Right. I would have had the kids running out of there very quickly if we saw something. I believe in ghosts, and I think we scare ourselves into believing in them, she went on to say. I've never seen any actual ghosts before, and I don't think I'll be going looking for them, as I don't want to scare myself. On the internet, I've never seen a picture as clear as that. And that's the name of that, too. I don't know. I have you seen these photos?
Have I seen these photos?
Yeah.
Yes. I can see what I can see in the one photograph, what looks like a little girl in the trees. But again, I'm not sure that it wasn't just the light shadows and tree bark creating that image. But it does look like a child is hiding in between the trees there.
I see tree bark.
So I'll give you that. I'll give her that. I'm not as cynical and mean as Tim. I'll kind of believe your story.
I see tree bark.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? There's a terrifying new movie out, Tim.
Yeah.
About this talking doll, this doll stalking and haunting. And of course, I'm talking about Toy Story 4, which comes out this weekend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is phenomenal. Just let me say this, Tim.
Yep.
In a movie where dolls come to life. This is its fourth installment, and I got to be honest with you. I got to see the preview. I took my kids, and I was thinking, I think they've plumbed these depths. They squeezed every nuance of kitsch and schmaltz into the third one, which I loved. I'm going to be honest with you. In that scene in Toy Story 3, when they're all on the conveyor belt heading towards the meltdown pit.
Yep.
And they all just start reaching over and holding one another's hands. So they've just resolved that this is it, but they're going to go together.
Yep.
This may have been the sound you heard in a silent movie theater.
Okay.
That might have been the sound that you heard emanate from me at that moment. It caught me off guard. I didn't expect that a cartoon movie would have an effect on me where I would legitimately go out loud in public, but I did.
Wow.
So I thought they ended that series beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, well, that's it. Let's just leave it alone. Let's not bastardize this. But it made so much money. They already started talking about going to a fourth. And I thought, no, what more do we have to tell? Andy's an adult now. And it's just, it's time. Just let's move on. But this may have been my favorite of the entire collection. Toy Story 4 is awesome. Great comedy, twists on different parts of the story. They actually had little snippets from Don Rickles that they were able to use. So Mr. Potato Head was back.
Oh,
it was well done. It, of course, plays on the kitschy and the schmaltzy a little bit. But this one to me was just a straight up comedy.
Oh.
So it's a rare find. Pixar is amazing. I would say the first and this movie are among my two favorites of the entire series. And I like them all. But this one and the first one are still my two favorites. And it's great that, you know, my son, my oldest son, was able to grow up watching that.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has two children that he can take to see this one. And it's a great kickoff. So I actually feel reinvigorated, which is weird to say in a movie franchise. I feel reinvigorated and hope to see more.
Oh, very cool.
So I tell you that because, well, Dave, what the hell does that have to do with the paranormal? Hey, folks, dolls coming to life, creeping around. That's kind of weird. Oh, you don't think so? Well, then let's talk about Annabelle Comes Home, which is also out and about in the movie theaters now, Tim.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It is the third installment in the Annabelle series. It is the newest installment in the Conjuring universe. You've got Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga returning as Ed and Lorraine Warren. Although this is not really an Ed and Lorraine Warren movie, they bookend the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they appear in the beginning of it for a little bit and at the end. The rest is typical horror fare. And for those of you that saw the Goosebumps movies with your children, where the concept is that every one of the creatures from R.L. Stine's books are released on the world. and it's done in a comical way, you're going to recognize Annabelle Comes Home. It's basically the same deal. All of the tropes and horror movie missives you've seen are released in this film. And all of the dark side of the Conjuring movies resurface and are all represented. And it's kind of trying to put the genie back in the bottle throughout the entire movie. There's no secrets here because it's in the commercials. Their young daughter, Janet, has a babysitter. The babysitter's friend comes in and sneaks into the museum. And although the sign says touch nothing, she goes around touching everything and then is stupid enough to open Annabelle's case.
No, no.
And unleashing holy hell in the Warren's home. So I'll say this. I still liked it. It was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining. I wouldn't say there were any real surprises, although I think that they are definitely tipping their hat to what the Conjuring 3 movie is going to be.
Okay.
So I think that they gave us a little foreshadowing in this movie for the next Conjuring. And I liked it. I definitely liked it better than the first Annabelle movie. Annabelle 2 was much better. That kind of the beginning, you know, the origin story of Annabelle.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was just straight up horror. It's not really based on any truth of the Warren stories. It's just taking a lot of liberties, as many people will say all of the movies have. But this is just a straight up horror movie by the people that have been bringing you the Conjuring movies. But it looks good. Or I shouldn't say it looks good. It was good. Out of 5 stars, I'm going to give it a solid 3.5, 3.75.
All right.
And that's only because I felt like they really did just kind of retread the Goosebumps storyline, but made it amped up for adults and really scary. So that's where I'm going to go with that series. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go next with Conjuring 3. And, I know that they've got a couple of new character movies they're going to be coming out with, I don't know, was it like the Janky Man or whatever the hell it was from, I can't think of his name from the Enfield Poltergeist episode movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Remember that tall, black, kind of janky looking, shadowy, creepy guy?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's back. The Nun has got another movie coming out. So, you know, we'll see some of these different spinoffs that continue. And I guess, you know, well, I know Annabelle appears in the Aquaman movie.
Yeah, at the. Well, spoiler alert.
James Wan directs the movie, who is involved in the Annabelle and Conjuring universe. And there's a scene where Aquaman and Mira are in their little underwater craft. And as they are kind of driving by at the bottom of the ocean, you see Annabelle sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was told during the movie that Annabelle also appears in the Shazam movie.
I'm trying to think of what scene she was in.
I guess she's sitting in one of the stores or something. I don't remember it. But
I don't either.
I'll have to Google that to see, but that's my take. So for this weekend's entertainment, 2 great movies to go see and have some fun with, both talking dolls. Both can be equally creepy or entertaining, depending on how you look at it. But I'm going to give, honestly, going to give Toy Story 4 5 out of 5 stars. I'm going to give Annabelle Comes Home 3.75 out of 5 stars.
All right.
Yep. So there you have it. That's my story. What's your story? Give us a call. Tell us your story. 651-300-4977. 651-300-4977. That's the number to call and share your tale. You know, Tim, every car comes with its share of stories as well. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after the big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. Well, you can't put a price tag on your stories. Now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell it or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew that was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you've finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in just minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers are not available in all areas. Hey, folks, remember that not only do you get to hear the best in paranormal talk radio here with Beyond the Darkness every Saturday and Sunday, you can join Tim and I every Tuesday for True Crime Tuesday, a look at some of the most unusual and bizarre crimes, plus some laugh-along moments when we talk dumb crimes, stupid criminals. This coming Tuesday, Ron Goldman's sister will be joining us as we talk about the murder story of O.J. Simpson, Ron Goldman, and Nicole Brown Simpson. This is a unique story, a unique perspective from the sister of Ron Goldman. We hope that you'll tune in to check that out. And let me ask you to do us a favor. If you enjoy programming like this, help support these programs. You can do that by subscribing. Go subscribe right now to True Crime Tuesday. It's $5 a month. That $5 a month gives you access to every brand new episode, 4 to 5 a month, plus access to over 2 years, I should say, of past episodes. How many episodes in total are we at now for True Crime Tuesday, Tim?
Trying to remember. I think 115 is what we're at.
115 yep. Shows averaging between 90 minutes to 2 hours long. That's almost around 300 hours of true crime entertainment for $5 a month. And again, by supporting us, it allows us to keep it commercial free. It is allowing us to create the new app, which we will have out within the next month. We've ponied up the money. We've got the developer going. Our iPhone app will be available soon, so you'll be able to access us on your iPhone a little bit easier. But it helps us to maintain all of these points and keep commercials down on this show, commercials out of our True Crime podcast. So please subscribe to the show. Support us for this show and that show by subscribing to True Crime Tuesday. And you can do that very easily by going to Patreon and looking up True Crime Tuesday, or just go to darknessradio.com and click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and you'll find information there on how you can subscribe. So please help support this show, help support the efforts that we put forth every week to entertain you for only $5 a month. That's all we ask. Tim, where shall we go next in the world of supernatural news?
Well, an unusual story, Dave, in that, you know, there is a lot of controversy, even a Netflix movie that had to do with the death of Kurt Cobain. And a lot of people seem to think that Courtney Love had something to do with it. But there's a new story out there right now saying that Courtney Love is saying that Kurt Cobain's ghost has visited her. And she's saying it herself. The whole singer answered questions from Marilyn Manson, Lana Del Rey, and more. The queen of grunge is I think that might be self-professed. Courtney Love recently answered 20 questions from notable names that spanned from singer Lana Del Rey and designer Tom Ford. The Interview magazine feature dives to some interesting questions, including a predictable Marilyn Manson asking about her most memorable sexual experience. Depending on what side of the fence you fall on, you might want to know that or not. Spoiler alert, she didn't actually answer that question. Thank you, God. Along with taking on good-humored questions from friends, Love also revealed a chilling paranormal experience. I don't know if you know this or not, Dave, but Courtney Love was a stripper here in town at one time.
No. Where at? King of Diamonds?
No. That's too classy of a joint for her. I think she was
at the Polka Barn.
I think it was over
in Minnetonka,
over at the Pain Reliever. I think over in St. Paul. Yeah, they probably had her behind glass so she wouldn't bite the patrons. Actor Joshua Boone asked if she'd ever seen a ghost. Love not only replied with yes, but revealed that it was none other than Kurt Cobain's spirit. I saw Kurt in a chair for a moment, and he said hi to me, and then he left. She claims of the experience that it happened in her Hancock Park home. She also named a night that she played with Cobain as her favorite gig ever and even stirred up some controversy with Tommy Lee after bashing the dirt. There was a Super Transcendent Whiskey A Go-Go gig in, I think, 91. It was Winter and Nevermind by Nirvana had just come out. Smells Like Teen Spirit was on KROQ, K-Rock, like 50 times a week. She answered of Kate Moss's question about the best gig she's ever been to. It was amazing. We were this perfect band for about 4 minutes, and that's it. That's the gig, 1991 in Hollywood, with my beautiful, creamy, blue-eyed boy, Kurt, she was quoted as saying. She gave nods to Juice WRLD. Although she's not sure who he is, Ariana Grande and Kanye West as top 40 artists that inspire her. Even with all the positivity, her poor review of Motley Crue's Netflix film The Dirt landed Love in a bit of trouble. Tommy Lee went on to say in a tweet, "Hey, Ad Courtney, when's your movie coming out? Oh, wait, never." That was Tommy Lee's response to Courtney.
Well thought out and perfectly written.
Yeah, it was. No movie coming out, but a whole reunion could be indeed on the way, is what this story says. And there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hello, Dave and Tim. My name is Mary. I'm a 70-year-old woman who has been retired for 2 years from a longtime profession as a registered nurse. I wish I could say that I've been a listener for years. However, that is not the case. I've listened to your shows for approximately 2 months. Well, welcome to the family. Thank you for joining us, Mary. I recently discovered the world of podcasts within the last 6 months, and I stumbled across your show. How very happy I am that I did. Both of you young men bring such a big smile to my face. I'm fascinated by your stories and your ability to maintain your sense of humor while discussing the things that you do. Needless to say that I certainly remain on the learning curve of things, and I'm reminded to try and always keep an open mind. I sincerely hope that you will indulge me as I explain the story of how I became a true believer of the paranormal. It all began when I was a child. It's easy enough to say that each and every time I found a way to rationalize everything, since I was young, I would take my experiences, like hearing voices, for example, to my mother. I had no clue that such things were possible. It was then that my mother started telling me about her experiences, and each story was more fascinating than the next. I felt special at those times. I felt as if it was something my mother shared with me and not my older brother or younger sister. It was a bond. I was amazed by my mom's account of the paranormal and thought that this was just a natural part of being Jewish. I will interject here that I am the adopted daughter of a Jewish family. My brother was also adopted, and I had a sister who was younger that was the natural child of my parents. Moving on in my own history, I grew up still in the attitude that there is a rational explanation to everything, and although I believed that what my mother told me, I believed it was true for her. However, for me, it was a memory of stories and the time we shared together. Little did I know that something was about to change my mind and my heart. Fast forwarding in time, the experience took place in 1984. I was an adult nursing student with 1/4 away from graduating. I attended a private Christian college, and it is enough to say that although Christian, my parents took in stride and were very supportive of me. I was in my early 30s, and I was determined I would achieve what I always felt was my calling. The quarter I was in focused on pediatric nursing. We had study classes with tests, and we had clinical experiences as well. Because there was a pediatric hospital in our city, this is where all clinical experiences took place. This was the hardest clinical I had ever had to this point. I confess that emotionally I was overwhelmed. For me, it was heartbreaking to care for innocent children to be compromised by a disease process or by the hands of those who were in charge of their care. I can say that I realized just how great it is to have nurses that work with children. It wasn't rocket science for me to see that I was not cut out to become such a nurse. Every clinical found me crying, and although I provided the care to my best of my ability, I was in an emotional turmoil. Finally, the quarter ended and grades were posted, 1 grade for the academic side and 1 grade for the clinical. I passed the academic side. However, I failed the clinical. I was devastated, completely and utterly devastated. I never failed a clinical before. In fact, I would describe myself as a hands-on type of person. Nevertheless, I failed. Telling my elderly parents that I failed is what hurt the most. I tried to make sense of it, and I could only conclude that my emotions were the cause of this failure. Such a failure meant that I would have to repeat the entire course and wait a year before I could repeat it. The nursing class moved on, and I was not a part of that one last quarter. Luckily for me, I did not have to share this news with my parents in person. They, like so many Jewish elderly, were in Florida. Every year, they spent the winter in Florida and stayed away from the harsh winters in Ohio. It took about a week before I could try and move on with my life. I had several part-time jobs while a student and was still there. I was married at the time, and that helped me stay focused. My parents said not to cry anymore and it would be okay. So, defeated as I was, I moved on. Then one night I was awakened by the sound of my mother's voice. It was exactly like the voices I had experienced from my childhood years. The voice, however, was my mother, and she was whispering right in my ear. It was as if she were right there. She said, "Mary, come down here." I awoke and initially thought it was just a dream. Being an expert by this point of rationalizing, I concluded that perhaps my recent upheaval and failure had me a bit on edge. I proceeded to fall back asleep. I don't know how long it was I slept. However, once again, I heard my mother whispering in my ear, "Mary, come down here." This continued at least 5 or 6 times. I ended up not being able to fall back asleep. It was at that moment that I woke up my husband and told him that my mom was calling me and I had to go to Florida. It was surprising that he didn't argue at this point as much as the fact that we barely had enough funds to support ourselves and it would be money we did not have to even buy the plane tickets. I was determined to find a way. Later in the day, I contacted a friend and told her my story. She loaned me the money to go to Florida, and I was up on a plane to Miami the following morning. I contacted my dad to let him know I was coming. It was then that I learned my mother had been in the hospital for the previous 5 days in a coma. Shock was all I could feel. I boarded the plane, and my dad was there to greet me. He then told me that neither my brother nor sister knew about Mom. He did not want any of us to know what was going on. In other words, he was carrying this burden all on his own. When he asked me what made me come down, I told him I heard Mom telling me to come. He wasn't surprised as much as he just commented something to the effect that Mom and I always believed in that mumbo-jumbo stuff. We drove to the hospital in silence. Once at the hospital, I looked at my mother and was horrified. Her face was completely red and her neck was so swollen, it was almost the size of her head. It was too red. We stayed there for about an hour, and then Dad suggested we leave to get some dinner. I could not help but think, what had brought me down here? Was I supposed to witness the death of my mother? Was this her last wish? Again, very briefly, I must interject that for years while growing up, my mother and I did not see eye to eye. Some of it was just the teen factor, you know, that time as a parent you could swear that some alien spaceship abducted your child and left you with a duplicate child that turned into a monster. The other part was my mother's controlling nature. She had dominated my life, and in some respects, the results were terrible. Still, however, it was the past, and I obviously came out on the positive side of things. So here I am with my dad. We had a nice dinner, and our dialogue was not focused on the state of affairs of my mother. We then proceeded to the condo to try to relax. While sitting in the living room, I noticed a book on the coffee table by Reader's Digest. It was one that explained all the different medications used by elderly people. I stated what they were in simple terms, what they were used for, and who or what not should be who not should be taking them. I picked up the book, and for reasons I cannot explain, I began reading about steroids and their use. My mother had steroids in her IV medication. I noticed that when we were there, I continued to read and learned that this was the medication of choice for someone with respiratory issues, which is what my dad shared was why she was in the hospital in the first place. I continued to read, and right before my eyes was the answer. Steroids should not be given to people with any kind of thyroid problem, listing a goiter as one. My mom has a goiter. This was the right medication for the respiratory issue, but the wrong one for my mom. This was like poison for her. Immediately, I alerted my father as to what I just read. I told him that he needs to tell the doctors what we discovered. The following morning, we were at the hospital with the Reader's Digest in hand. My dad shared this with the doctor, and the medication was stopped. Another hour went by, and I told my dad to go out for a while and get away. For 5 days, he had been sitting in that chair in that room, never leaving my mother's side for as long as the hospital would allow. I promised him that I would stay by Mom's side until she returned. It was at least 4 hours later, with me reading and dozing off and on, I noticed that Mom wasn't looking red anymore. Not her face, not her neck. I actually started to feel as if the swelling in her neck had dissipated. I felt this was a good sign, and then just sat back feeling hopeful. Shortly after reassuring myself multiple times, my mother sat up straight in bed, shocked to see her sit up after now 6 days going on 7 being in a coma. Nothing could have prepared me for what happened next. My mother looked straight at me and said, I knew you would come. As if this wasn't enough, she continued talking and told me that she had been up all night with Grandma. How could this be? My grandma had been dead for years. Curiously, I asked her what she had to say. Mom then proceeded to share her visit with Grandma. Grandma had told her how happy she is and showed Mom her beautiful home. They talked and shared what was going on in all her grandchildren's lives. She then said that Grandma told her that it was not her time to leave yet and she had to come back. She then said the next thing she knew, she was awake and I was at her side. It was about 2 hours later that my dad showed up and my boys, and boy, was he ever surprised. He thought he lost my mom and that she was at death's door. Instead, Mom looked at him, smiled, and said, "I love you." Mom stayed in the hospital another week without complications. I returned back to Ohio a different person. I couldn't help but ponder what just transpired. My dad felt like I saved her life and had no explanation for how it happened in the first place. "It must be just that mumbo jumbo," I said with a chuckle. Nothing was ever mentioned by either my mom or dad after that. It was something that could not be explained or rationalized. It was not her time. As simple as that. My parents returned home, and I spent the summer with my mother in between working my part-time jobs. It was glorious. She lived to see me graduate the following year. During the summer of 1985, my mother told me some things I truly never expected to hear. She told me she was sorry for all the things that happened between us. She went on to say how she would chastise me, how she would always tell me everything I did was not good enough. She continued this dialogue, naming specific moments in our lives. She said that what was so outstanding was the fact that I had succeeded in spite of her, and for this, she had to make an apology. Needless to say, both of us were in tears. It was the most riveting and powerful healing for both of us. Then in the spring of 1986, she passed away in her sleep in her Florida home. I realize I've written a great deal and appreciate you taking the time to read this and hopefully share with your listeners. There is an epilogue to this story, and since I've come this far, I might as well tell you the rest. I believe this is where the lessons were learned and feel compelled to share them as well. Once back home, I started back into my routine of working all my little jobs. One afternoon, I received a phone call from the dean of the college I had attended. He wanted to meet with me. The long and short of his visit is that I had learned that my fellow classmates had come to him with regard to my failing my clinical in pediatrics. He said that my classmates felt like the instructor was purposefully picking on me. He also shared that the instructor had previous complaints about her from three students before me who had failed their clinical. He wanted to know if I would file a complaint. Not knowing at that moment what to do, I couldn't help but inquire as to what the reason this instructor gave for failing me. He told me the following. It was stated that I had difficulty getting along and taking care of patients that were of different racial, social, economic, and cultural backgrounds, and thus was unacceptable in the calling of a nurse. Suddenly, I knew what to say, and it left the dean with his mouth open. I told him that was ludicrous and shared my story. Firstly, I shared with the dean that I have been working for the past 10 years for Planned Parenthood in an inner city clinic. Then I shared that I also worked that part-time as an operating room technician at an inner city hospital for 3 years at the same time. Then, as if this wasn't enough, I told him that for the past 8 years I've been married to an Afro-American man from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And lastly, I shared with him that I am a grown adult Jewish woman attending a private Christian college. It was then that I said I would be happy to make a formal complaint. This resulted in the instructor resigning her position and never, well, at least at this school, will be able to do this to another student. Even so, look what a simple twist of fate did. Had I not failed that clinical, I would not have gone to Florida and my mother might have died. If ever there was a time to say all things happen for a reason, then this sure is an example. I used to cringe when I would hear such a thing since it brought me no comfort at all. I think about it differently these days. About 1 year after Mom went to be with Grandma, some other things happened. It was sudden and profound. I would be walking down the street and suddenly I would hear telepathically information about the person or persons passing by. I was with a coworker when it occurred. We went into the local restaurant where we always went for lunch, and I was hearing things about the waitress and all kinds of people that I didn't know. I told her about it, and it did not stop there. I proceeded to seek help from a spiritual church I heard about and began to realize what a gift I had been given. I felt better as I learned more about spiritualism and how to cooperate with the gifts. This turned into years of giving messages to people and helping where a kind word or message provided comfort. I've never done it for money since it was, by all accounts, a gift from my mom in order for me to be the best nurse I could possibly be. Once again, I appreciate your patience in reading this. I hope it helps others to keep an open mind and a lesson in not taking anything too seriously. Life is wonderful, however brief it may be. If things make one a better person, then I can only conclude it is worth living for. Thank you all for all that you both do. Best regards, and that comes from Mary Ryan. Mary, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
All right, Tim, what's our next story?
Well, this has to do with UFO sightings, Dave, in particular by the Pentagon. Yep, the Pentagon.
The Pentagon, you say?
Yep. Three U.S. Okay. senators were reportedly briefed by the Pentagon on Wednesday about recent reports detailing UFO sightings by Navy pilots. The revelation reported by Politico comes days after President Trump disclosed that he, too, had been briefed on the unidentified aerial phenomenon and how it encounters. The information sessions were organized by the Navy and also included staff from the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, that sources told the site. Briefing requests by Congress members of key oversight committees have been on the uptick since it was revealed by the Pentagon's Shadowy Aerospace Threat Identification Program still investigates claimed sightings of alien spacecraft, as was exclusively reported by the Post last month. Several U.S. Navy pilots told the New York Times that they reported to that program spotting UFOs while training over the East Coast in 2014 and 2015. While flying at least 30,000 feet over the Atlantic Ocean, the pilots who were stationed on the aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt told the paper that they were routinely witnessing strange objects flying at hypersonic speeds, performing maneuvers beyond the physical limits of a human crew. Senator Mark Warner, a Democrat from Virginia, the vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, confirmed with Politico that he was at the Wednesday briefing. If naval pilots are running into unexplained interference in the air, that's a safety concern. Warner believes we need to get to the bottom of, his spokesperson Rachel Cohen told the site. Members of Congress and their staffers of the Armed Service and Defense Appropriations Committees have also been briefed, officials told Politico, adding more Pentagon meeting requests have been made. Trump, while discussing the UFO reports with ABC News's George Stephanopoulos last week, said, "Do I believe it? Not particularly." There you go.
Interesting. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more of the best in supernatural news and your Perisher stories when we return right here on Beyond the Darkness. Hey, everybody. You have to check out this amazing new true crime podcast. It's called 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. It's about a murder that took place in Washington, D.C. A family, their housekeeper, held hostage for 22 hours before being killed. When the murderers set their mansion on fire, you'll be shocked by what they went through during those 22 hours, and you won't believe how they found the guy. I won't ruin the ending, but all I will say is pizza crust. I'm telling you, this is awesome. Keep an eye out for a special sneak peek extra episode this week here on Beyond the Darkness. And if you can't wait, download 22 Hours, An American Nightmare now on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. New episodes every Monday.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave. That's Tim. And this is Supernatural News Parishare. What's our next story, sir?
Well, we're going to Mars, Dave, where an odd flash was photographed on Mars. Those kinky, kinky aliens, I'm sure.
Wait a minute. First of all, the moon flashed us 2 weeks ago. Now Mars is flashing us?
Yeah, the universe has got some sort of weird, weird thing going on right now. They need counseling, Dave.
I guess so.
Yep. NASA's Curiosity rover, it's probably aptly named, recently photographing a puzzling anomaly in the form of an odd flash seemingly floating above the surface of the red planet. The weird image was taken this past Sunday and released by the space agency on Thursday. The appearance of the oddity was apparently rather brief, as it did not, aren't they all, as it did not show up in images taken in the seconds before and after the photograph was snapped. As to the nature of the weird anomaly, well, NASA suggested that it could have been a reflection or some kind of camera interference. That hasn't stopped some UFO enthusiasts from theorizing that perhaps the oddity has some kind of alien origin. A similar situation occurred back in April of 2014 when another enigmatic flash was photographed on Mars, sparking ET speculation and forcing the space agency to issue their best scientific explanation for how it could have occurred.
So that's it? That's all they have to share with us?
Yeah, it's just a quick flash.
Hey, you got flashed by Mars or something over here?
Yep.
Yeah, that's it, huh?
Quick flash from Mars and that's it.
Well, good on them. Hi, Dave and Tim. I'm a huge fan. I mean, literally obsessed and always scared while listening. Let me tell you about my most recent dream. It contains aliens, and I'm thinking I've been picked up and abducted in my dreams. Side note, I love paranormal podcasts and love listening to people's perspective about the unknown, but I've been pretty safe in my personal life with experiencing them. Thank God. So I had a dream that I was working at the Walmart. I've never worked at Walmart, so that was random. But in my dream, I was like a lead cashier, not a manager, but someone that was a sub-manager or leader. I was told by a cashier I had a phone call waiting for me and that it was the reptilians wanting to exclusively talk to me because they knew I was into the paranormal and I would know how to help them with their plan on disclosing their existence to humans. I was terrified. They said that a craft would hover shortly outside of this particular Walmart, and they would come inside and give further instructions. But in the meantime, I was to call a meeting of all the staff and disclose to them first who the reptilians are, to not be afraid of them, and when customers see them, how to coax their fears. I had to get someone to help me on the store's intercom because I didn't know how it worked. Again, never worked at Walmart. And I very anxiously asked all associates to come to the break room for an emergency meeting. I don't remember leading the meeting, but I remember walking around the store being so anxious and nervous to see what they actually looked like. In my real life, I work as a grocery delivery person where I shop on an app and deliver, or where people shop on an app and deliver their groceries. This was incorporated into the dream because the aliens placed an order for groceries and no one wanted to take it. I reluctantly took it and found out that they were vegan and had special requested items that were not in our language. Okay, so I'm wandering around the store full of angst. I see in the break room how employees were looking up and had a frightened look on my face, so I knew the reptilians were there. I walked in, and to my surprise, they were very human-like, so I immediately became not as frightened. There were two women and a very, very, very tall man, like 14 feet tall. One woman was blonde and had eyes. It looked like she had these fake colored contacts in. The other woman was more ethnic looking, as if she were biracial. The blonde woman knew who I was and thanked me for being brave. We discussed their grocery order, and she said she knew she would have to translate those words into English for me, and it wasn't a problem. She went on to say that they needed a group of people to board their craft and to come with them. At this point, I automatically knew I was one of them since I had been so heavily involved in all of this. We got on the craft, and I remember having to put a seatbelt on because we weren't used to the gravity changes. Y'all, I felt the sensation of going really fast, and it felt so real. I sat next to the blonde woman, and she said that they would have to have us come on board because we were actually taken as hostages, but nothing would happen. They were going back and forth with the government, and they needed actual bodies to prove their point, almost like a threatening way. but they wouldn't actually hurt us. I actually believed her and wasn't scared. The last thing I remembered was being dropped off at my brother and sister-in-law's backyard, and they had a picnic table and were getting ready to have our family dinner. In real life, we take turns each week going to one of our homes to have a potluck-style dinner. I'm married to a twin, and they have an older brother, so it's three sets of siblings and their parents that rotate these dinners. I get to the backyard and I see my mother-in-law sitting with my nephew at the backyard table. I told her it was so good to be home and how crazy a day it was. She said, "Honey, you were missing for 42 weeks. I started bawling my eyes out knowing I had family worried about me for almost a year, and my time with the reptilians lasted for what seemed like just a day. I woke up shortly after that. What the hell? What did I dream? What did it mean? Have I listened to so many podcasts that I actually grabbed the attention of aliens?" And actually, I took a mini break from the alien podcast realm and have been listening to you guys, so aliens were not on my mind. Hopefully, you can give some advice or feel like for a second you went into an alternate universe, because I'm slightly convinced I did. Please look at my Instagram at Carrie Hill to see that I'm not a crazy person and I'm an average young woman who had a crazy paranormal dream. All my best, Carrie. Well, Carrie, I would like to tell you, you are not crazy. But I can't. After hearing your dream, you're nuts. You're bonkers. Cuckoo. No. I don't know. It sounds like you slipped into an alternate reality. You know, an alternate reality where you're a Walmart lead cashier. And the part that bothers you is that you were abducted by aliens. I think that might have been the upside of your life in that reality.
Sorry,
is that cruel, Tim? Was that too much?
No, not at all. Here's what I'm worried about with the whole Walmart thing. I don't know. I mean, I know it's, you can call a meeting of the Walmart employees not to take a shot at the reptilians. Uh-huh. How are you going to stop the general denizens of Walmart from getting to the gun counter and taking a shot at them, though? That's my thing.
Well, it's behind glass now, I think. You have to go through a lot of rigmarole. And the people are not real fast moving at the Walmarts, Tim. I don't know if you've been there recently.
I have a couple times this week.
Yeah, they're not that fast moving.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Dave. Oh, Dave. You think that a little bit of glass would stop a guy in a moving cart from hitting that glass hard enough to shatter it and getting them a shotgun or two? Sadly mistaken, especially when there's a reptilian walking around trying to take their Twinkies.
Just interesting.
Like, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. I don't really have any advice. I think it's a cool dream because it was so vivid and so imaginative. And what was going on, maybe you had slipped into an alternate reality, an alternate life. One of your other versions was telegraphing what was taking place. So kudos to you. 42 weeks. You did it one day in that dream realm, 1 hour in a dream. It all worked out pretty well, I think. So very cool. Thanks for sharing that with us.
I do have to share on the Instagram, though.
Wait, yes.
You probably want to take the one picture off of you with your arms around the reptilians.
Yes.
That makes you look a little weird.
Yeah. A little crazy.
Take that down.
Yeah. No. Here's the deal, though. When, Tim, has Instagram ever proven that you're not nuts?
That's true, yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't know.
I have some questionable photos on Instagram, too.
Yeah. All right. What's our next news story, Tim?
The next one has to do with a guitar shop, Dave, and security there capturing some ghostly activity. I always hope that like Jimi Hendrix would come back to a guitar shop and just decide to play a concert, something like that, be able to catch something like that. And maybe the shop in England has caught a famous guitarist. Who knows? It's just a dream of mine. A spooky piece of security camera footage from a music shop in England appears to show a number of guitars seemingly being moved by an unseen force that the owners suspect could be a ghost. The store in question, known as Guitars, Amps, and Keyboards, is reportedly located in the city of Brighton. The proprietors of the establishment suspected something was amiss last month when the security system filmed a weird, wispy form that looked to be almost browsing the store. Their already peaked curiosity went to 11, so to speak, it's a Spinal Tap joke. When cameras at the store captured some odd activity that occurred when the shop was closed in the video, which can be seen in this article, which you can't see because it's radio. Isn't that fun? a pair of guitars hung along a wall inexplicably begin moving as if someone or something is touching them. Later in the footage, a price tag can be seen falling from another guitar in a fashion which suggests that it was yanked off the instrument, probably so that it could be loaded into a van and then taken off with. I would do that if I were a ghost. The mystified owners of the shop noted that some have suggested that that perhaps the guitars were simply hung incorrectly and had been adjusting, because that'll happen, but expressed skepticism about that explanation since the store doesn't have any source of ventilation which could account for the force displayed in the video. Skeptics, of course, will point to another prosaic possibility that the paranormal activity was merely a publicity stunt by the store in hopes of drawing gawkers looking for ghosts and converting them into guitar-buying customers. I don't know, Dave. It's pretty hard to yank a tag off of a guitar because they wrap it very firmly around where you would put your guitar strap. So they, I think there's some pretty compelling stuff on that video when you watch it.
Really?
Yeah.
Enough to prove to you that there's some kind of poltergeisty activity?
There may be, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. All right. Dear Duo of Darkness. Oh, I kind of like that one, too.
I like that, yeah.
Over the last 20 months or so, I had to learn the hard way how dysfunctional eyes and irregular brain chemistry can literally make you see things that aren't there. At least, that's what I would like to believe. Otherwise, our apartment was Shadow People Central for more than a year. My husband had to undergo brain surgery in August of 2017 to have an abscess removed that had settled on the part of his brain that is responsible for transmitting visual information. After he finally left the hospital, my own autoimmune disease kicked in and inflamed my optical nerve to a degree that I was legally blind for 6 months. In addition to this, my husband had to undergo cataract removal surgery on both eyes. As soon as he had recuperated from the brain surgery, this is something that usually takes quite a while. So during the first few months, both of us weren't seeing much at all. Since I was physically more fit than he was, he would usually call for me if he needed anything. He had trouble getting up or even collecting his thoughts, so I was called into the living room on a pretty regular basis. After a few weeks, he complained that I would be walking into the kitchen or just stand in the hallway when I'd called for me. While his sight was blurry, he was quite capable of seeing the outlines of things, while my sight was only black and white. Hence, I could never quite tell what he was up to. I repeatedly explained to him and told him that I would never just stand out in the hallway or ignore him while he called for me. He insisted on having seen me just standing there in the hallway, and I blame this on his surgery and weird feedback from the brain. Ultimately, he got so freaked out about it, seeing me in the hallway, that I started to yell back, "Give me a second," or "On the way," when I heard him. That was the point. We found out that he saw someone in the hallway while I was still hollering back from a different room. We started to leave the lights on in the hallway as soon as it got dark, and the phenomena had stopped for him. For me, not so much. The more my eyesight returns, the more I keep seeing shadows out of the corner of my eye. I'm doing my best to blame it on my eye condition and the slow feedback to the brain. Most of the time, I actually believe it. Something else that occurred will freak me out as long as I live. Like I said, while we both had trouble with our eyes during most of our year, we suffered from very different disabilities. I still see things very blurry with a limited color scheme, while my husband would often struggle to make sense of things since the optical center had trouble recognizing things. One afternoon, he woke up from a nap and started to shiver, obviously being terribly afraid. I walked over to the bed and sat down next to him, gently stroking his cheek. I figured he had one of those famous nightmares. Instead, he withdrew from my hand and asked me, "Who are these people?" I assured him that there was nobody else in the room, but he didn't believe me. He kept saying in a panicky voice that there were strangers in the room, that there were people behind me. He sounded so sure that I almost was afraid to turn around, even though I knew there was nobody there. I finally got him to sit up, hold on to me, and close his eyes. After a few deep breaths, he opened his eyes again, and the people were gone. I'm 95% sure that his brain had somehow confused the TV broadcast with real people and had sent him into some kind of shock. But there's the other 5%, and I'm really not sure if my explanation can make sense of that. On the other hand, he had previously seen people with dog-like faces on the TV, so who knows? Either his brain hiccuped or our TV needs a thorough exorcism. As usual, with best regards from Weird Carcosa, that comes from KJ. KJ, thank you for sharing your story and your husband's creepy story as well. All right, Tim, what's our next supernatural news tale?
Well, we're going after alien life. Not necessarily us, Dave, but a Russian billionaire is going after alien life. An exhaustive search is being struck out, for signs of alien life, but it's coming up a little short. An ambitious alien hunting program backed by a Russian billionaire has so far failed to yield any signs of intelligent life out in space. The disappointing news comes by way of an update from the Breakthrough Listen Project, which has surveyed a whopping 1,327 stars for signals that would be indicative of an advanced technological civilization, boasting a budget of $100 million and a 10-year commitment. The program is the brainchild of entrepreneur Yuri Milner, who launched the initiative in January of 2016. In a newly published paper on the work done so far by scientists with Breakthrough Listen, they detail how the group utilized two telescopes here on Earth to examine the stars and found that there was nothing in particular that caught their attention. While they did notice some oddities during the study, which stands as the most comprehensive search for alien life to date, the researchers explained that they eventually managed to determine that the handful of outliers came from prosaic sources such as satellite interference. Given the presumably complex nature of an advanced civilization's way of communicating, scientists with the project conceded that they simply may not be looking for the right kind of signal, or that humankind may not even be technologically advanced enough to pick up such a message. Be that as it may, the organization is committed to continuing their quest and even went so far as to release their data to the public so that any armchair alien hunters can examine the information for themselves and possibly pick up on something that they may have missed. With that in mind, let's hope the signals didn't contain some coded message instructing aliens here on Earth to commence the invasion.
Yeah, yeah, let's do that. Let's hope that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could be, I don't know. Maybe I'm worrying, but yeah, let's not send the wrong messages.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Huh. All right, let's see what else we have in the way of stories, Tim. We've got quite a few here. All right, dear duo of darkness. KJ is back with another email. A few months ago, I sent you an email about a tarot session gone wrong and another one that talked about weird visual occurrences that might explain sightings of shadow people. Since my eyesight was seriously bad at this point, it still isn't so amazing, but it is getting better. And I'm afraid they were utterly unreadable. As a matter of fact, Dave read one email I sent concerning weird dreams that Tim kindly verified as an out-of-body experience, and the email seems to have been utterly unreadable. I'm terribly sorry about this. Anyway, here goes the second try with the tarot session. Hopefully this time it'll be readable and maybe it'll even amuse you. Here goes. Since my late teens, I had been fascinated by magic. Old cultures and things I would later learn were labeled paranormal. About 10 years ago, I happened to work with two ladies that were involved in different fields of vast interests. And as a self-professed medium, Tess is a practitioner of an old religion. What connected us was our common interest in tarot. While I use tarot as a tool for psychological help, mainly for others, Anne uses them for reading the future, Tess for general divination. We all have our go-to sets. One evening, we met at Anne's place and decided, after too many mugs of mead, we decided to break open a new pack of regular Plaxing cards and read each other's future, the gypsy way, if you will. After reading each other's fortunes, we decided to take a look at our future as a circle of friends. We removed all kinds of jewelry to let the energies flow. Tess is a Reiki practitioner and believes in this stuff anyway, and I thought there couldn't be any harm in it. Man, was I wrong. We locked hands, mixed the cards in a rough circle, closed our eyes, and picked four cards, one for each of us, and as a last one for our future connection. I should have known that something was off since we picked the cards with closed eyes, but in perfect unison, almost as if We were being guided. Long story short, the cards gave us interesting outlooks for ourselves. The final card signified there wouldn't be much of a common future. All of this, by way, ultimately came true. After the session, the vibe of the room suddenly shifted. Anne settled back on her pillow and stared into the empty space above the table. Tess settled first, leaned back, and then laid down on the sofa as if she was about to go to sleep. I sat on a small sheepskin rug and suddenly felt like there was something behind me. I have to confess that the idea of spirits or ghosts never quite worked for me, but in this moment, I just knew something was there, something warm, kind, and protective. I avoided looking at my friends, grabbed my Celtic cross and rings and Lucky Charm bracelet, and put everything on as if my life depended on it. I had no idea what a white light protection was, but I somehow mentally envisioned and a protective shield around me, and then finally looked up. For a moment, Tess seemed to be surrounded by a bubble of white light, while she was indeed either meditating or sleeping peacefully. Anne, on the other hand, still stared into the distance while she quietly mumbled to herself. I was about to get up and break that cycle when I noticed something in the corner between the bookshelf and the wall, something like a small black cloud that started to take form. Not that I was familiar with, having always been drawn to the dark side of things. I was about to draw Anne's attention to it, since it was rather close to her, when she turned to me instead. Her eyes were utterly dark. Her pupils had extended to a point where I couldn't see her eye color anymore. I might have had a couple of curse words because she scared the you-know-what out of me. Tess woke up from my unkind and not so quiet reaction, and Anne slowly shook her head and returned to her regular self. We packed our things and got the hell out of Dodge, leaving it to Anne to clean up the spiritual mess in her apartment. A few days later, I was able to take both lassies separately and talk to both lassies separately and will never forget what they told me after I described what I believed to have witnessed. Tess told me that she had seen a woman behind me, clear as daylight. She described every detail, including the fact that her hands were on my shoulder. During the experience, I had the feeling of almost being hugged from behind, so having hands on my shoulders made perfect sense. She also happened to describe a dear deceased friend that she had never met that I rarely talk about. There were also no pictures of said friend in my flat. She also talked about having seen a gentleman in the doorway to the living room we had settled in, again describing someone very familiar to me. Anne verified having seen the same apparition in her mind's eye, since she had never truly turned around to face the door, but later verified the person independently from each other and several years apart. The lesson learned from that night? Tarot can work like a Ouija board. If you let the cards create the rules, doing a combined session should be done with the same amount of protection as required for a Ouija or similar sessions. Lastly, I instantly understood that I have a soul that still watches over me, and somewhere on the other side is a seriously pissed off writer that wasn't too happy with what was going on in any way. I've learned to be more careful, trust my instincts, and rely on my self-picked protection items. I will also never use any regular playing cards or reading, and will stick with my own sets, Celtic Animals or Geiger, and will leave it to others to experiment with new sets. Sorry, this has been such a long email. I really tried to keep it short. Best regards from Dim Caracosa, again from KJ. Thank you, KJ. All right, Tim, where are we off to next in Supernatural News?
Argentina, Dave.
Argentina. That's all I got.
That's their state theme, evidently. Bizarre cattle mutilations are going on in Argentina, and a truly strange one at that. A case in Argentina has residents of a village on edge with fears that the chupacabra may be lurking around their community, also known as the cup of coffee. The weird incident reportedly occurred in the community of La Paz last week when a farmer noticed that one of his cows had gone missing. Following a lengthy search of the property, workers eventually located the lost creature and were aghast by its condition. According to the farmer, several of the creature's organs, including its tongue and eyes, had been removed in a manner which suggested that it had been done with a laser, as the cuts were both incredibly precise as well as seemingly sealed. Observers were also taken aback by the fact that there was no blood around the scene, and scavenger animals appeared to have no interest in the carcass. While these details appear to be in line with classic cases of cattle mutilations or alleged chupacabra activity, one additional aspect of the case is particularly perplexing and quite out of the ordinary. The farmer claims that when one of his workers went to take a picture of the animal's remains, his cell phone suddenly shut down. They initially suspected that the battery had died, but were amazed when a teacher from a school in town also tried to film the cow and saw her cell phone inexplicably run out of power when she got close to the dead creature. I cannot explain what is happening, the farmer marveled. It is as if it were a magnetic field or something that prevents taking pictures. As luck would have it, however, the farm worker was apparently able to snap at least one image before the mysterious cell phone snafu occurred. It is, as one might expect, fairly gruesome. For his part, the farmer claims that the cow was perfectly healthy before the eerie incident, which took his life. Considering the condition in which the creature was found, it's difficult to discern what exactly caused its unsettling demise. However, that hasn't stopped local media in Argentina from pointing the finger at its rather notorious culprit. In detailing the case of the dead cow in La Paz, one local newspaper boldly declared the chupacabra is back in action, hearkening back to its similar animal slaying from September, in which the infamous cryptid was also a suspect. The chupacabra is back in action, Dave.
That's this week on WWE Raw, the chupacabra's back.
Also, AJ Styles takes on The Rock.
No, nice.
Some bizarre cattle mutilations there in Argentina.
What else have you got for me?
Also, we move on to a story about Loch Ness and the monster there, the Loch Ness monster.
Holy cow! What's going on? He's been popular this year.
Yeah, he's been popping off here.
He
or she. We can't determine the sex because it won't spread like that last story earlier in the show.
It won't gender identify for us.
Yes, it won't gender identify. The Loch Ness Monster was filmed by a holiday couple, or a couple on holiday, so to speak. And she's definitely, it says she here. Well, they're identifying it. She's definitely black and a fair size, much like my old car in college. Gloria and Ian Davison's sighting is the seventh so far this year, Dave. And we're only in June. And according to Nessie expert Gary Campbell, it's credible. Credible. A husband and wife on holiday in the Highlands have had a monster surprise, and that one would be Nessie. Gloria and Ian Davison saw a dark creature with a head and neck as they drove alongside Loch Ness on Tuesday. It was the seventh sighting of the Loch Ness monster this year. The stunned couple stopped their car by Urquhart Bay and watched the creature for a minute before it disappeared beneath the water. 57-year-old stunned Gloria from Corbridge in Northumberland, there we go, who retired from a career in medical sales, said, "We have been to Loch Ness many times, but never seen the monster before. But I always like to look at the loch. I can't imagine how many pairs of eyes are on that loch at one time, but I've spent periods looking at the water because you never know. But at around 1:30 p.m., after I had just had lunch, my husband was driving and I was in the passenger seat gazing out at the loch. Then I suddenly saw something and I said to Ian, 'There's something down there.' He turned around and we got out of the car and there it was. We were very excited. It was about 300 meters away and definitely black. It seemed to have a head and a neck. I could definitely see its back and it was a fair size. It disappeared after a minute beneath the water. I'd hoped there was something Nessie in the loch. You always want to believe in something. All I can say is that we saw something we cannot explain, but it was animate, and it was definitely not a seal." 53-year-old Gloria and Ian, a construction consultant, now have had their glimpse of Nessie accepted by the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register. "This is our seventh sighting of the year, and these are all very credible sightings," said Gary Campbell, recorder of the Register. "It is clearly Loch Ness and clearly unexplained. In terms of Nessie videos, it's all also very clear, and we still don't know what it is. It all adds to the mystery. But do these latest sightings explain the Loch Ness mystery, is the question." "No," they go on to add. "Do they add weight to the evidence that there is something happening that is unexplained?" "Yes," they also said. The first sighting in 2019 of Nessie on January 24th was the earliest for 18 years. The last previous sighting was recorded by a Mr. Peacock, at 4 p.m. on May 27th. He and his son reported seeing something that at first looked like water breaking over a rock or log, causing waves also in Urquhart Bay area. But it lasted about 2 minutes before the disturbance disappeared and the water was calm again. The latest sighting comes as the professor leading a major scientific study of Loch Ness has suggested that Nessie might just be real. Professor Neil Gemmell of the University of Otago, New Zealand, and his team have been taking water samples from the loch from three different depths of their research vessel, Deep Scan. The scientists collected DNA left by all creatures from their skin, scales, feathers, fur, and feces. The DNA samples were then sent to labs in New Zealand, Australia, Denmark, and France to be analyzed. Professor Gemmell, an expert in genomics, ecology, population, conservation, and evolutionary biology, said the data was tested against most of the main theories about the Loch Ness Monster. While full details of the study were yet to be released, Professor Gemmell said one of the theories might be correct. Is there anything deeply mysterious? Depends on what you believe, he said. If there's anything startling, there are a few things that are a bit surprising. What we'll have achieved is what we set out to do, which is document the biodiversity of Loch Ness in June 2018 in some level of detail. We've tested each one of the main monster hypotheses, and three of them we can probably say aren't right, and one of them might be. Professor Gemmell said he hoped to announce the findings of the study in full next month, but would not confirm which hypothesis might be right. Sightings last year reached another record for this century after a woman spotted Nessie over the internet. Business consultant 42-year-old Carolyn Barnett from Farnborough near Bath, England, was watching the Loch Ness webcam at 10:20 a.m. on December 19th when she saw something move slowly up the loch. Mr. Campbell added, sightings are now at a level that were being recorded in the 1990s. There are more visitors to the Highlands now, so that they may have something to do with it. Also, the internet has meant that the loch has never been more watched and from anywhere in the world. It was in 1996 Mr. Campbell saw something resembling a mini whale with a black shiny back at the south end of the loch. Since then, Mr. Campbell has researched and logged over 1,080 sightings. He accepted 14 sightings last year, but one referred to an image taken in 2015 that will be logged for that year, meaning that Nessie was sighted 13 times in 2018. According to Google, there are 200,000 searches each month for the Loch Ness Monster. The monster mystery was estimated recently to be worth 41 million pounds to the region. Irish missionary St. Columba is first said to have encountered the beast in the River Ness in 565 AD. There you go.
All right. How many more stories do you have, sir?
I have two more.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and, here we go. Here's a short one, an email. Hi, Dave. I live in Louisiana. I'm 36 acres of land that was at one time a slaughterhouse. The building is still here. I'm sure there are things here other than just usual snakes, gators, bobcats, possums, and tweakers. One of these things is the ghost of a black man. He has shown himself to my husband twice. First incident, I was out of town. I work in Alabama on the weekends. I got a phone call from my frantic, shaky, very confused husband. He told me he woke up from a nightmare he couldn't explain. When he sat up, he reached for the .22 caliber in his nightstand, pointed it at the man standing at the end of the bed. As he came to his senses, the man faded. Then he turned on the lights. He quickly realized there's no way anyone could be standing there. At the end of our bed is a wall. 1 year later, almost to the day I came home from Alabama, I noticed a hole in the wall under my TV. I didn't say anything right away. I just sat next to him on the bed. My husband started to shake and tear up. He said, I woke up and he was standing there. All the lights were on. He was just there. I said, who was there? I shot him. Don't touch the wall. Don't look for the bullet. Don't touch it. There might be something on it. What? Oh, no. I knew immediately who he was referring to. I saw him clearly this time. He was wearing clothes from the 50s, maybe 60s. My best guess is it was his Sunday best, really shiny shoes. I shot him. He was probably in his late 30s, early 40s, receding hairline, light-skinned black man with a trimmed goatee. He was solid. I shot him, and he vanished. My jaw dropped. There was a definite bullet hole in the wall, and it was from a 380. I found the bullet a month later. I still have it. This happened in January. If you know anyone who might be able to take a look at this bullet and tell me more, please let me know. This man wants something or needs something. I would like to help him. I'm sure the neighbor knows something. His family owned the slaughterhouse. He has lived here most of his life. He was asked about this, and the man changed the subject very quickly. There is a lot more going on this property. I need help, or they need help. If you know, I know you probably won't call, but my phone number is, and my name is Jekka. Sometimes it's easier to call than to email. There's a little more to this story than just what's been written here. Jekka, I don't know for sure. I mean, you know, your best bet would be to reach out to a metaphysical shop or holistic center in your area and find a psychic medium sensitive that would be able to do some psychometry for you. That's psychometry on the bullet. Other than that, I don't know anybody else that just would be good to handle something like that. But wow, what a weird story. Thank you for sharing that. All right, Tim, what have you got for me next?
Well, let's talk about something that you reviewed earlier. Annabelle Comes Home. Actually, one of the stars of that movie, McKenna Grace, has detailed some real-life paranormal activity on the set. Official shooting for the next movie in the Conjuring universe, Annabelle Comes Home, is wrapped up, and actually the movie is out now. But the Eerie Tales cast members experienced on set keep coming to light. Star of the upcoming movie, McKenna Grace, has opened up about the strange and haunting experiences she encountered while shooting Annabelle Comes Home. From moving pianos to unexplained power loss in a production trailer and uncontrollable nosebleeds, these are the stories that 12-year-old star Grace dishes out on experiences that she claims have no explanations. She says, I've done about 3 scared scenes so far, and I haven't been too scared in those. But I do have a scary story. On one of the first days, I came and looked at the house that they built on set. We were doing our rehearsal, and my nose was pouring blood all of a sudden. The lights were off because they had to reset something, and I was like, there's blood. And then as soon as I stepped outside to go to the restroom to get a tissue, it stopped. It was creepy. But then we had the set blessing, so everything is good now. That is somewhat creepy, but a little skepticism. Maybe Grace was a little bit ill that day. Perhaps she might have had breakfast or lunch, which didn't seem to agree with her. There's a host of reasons why that may have happened, but are we honestly meant to believe everything suddenly became all right after the set was blessed? This is what the article goes on to say, although those may seem like a little bit of reach too. An alien abduction on the set of Annabelle Comes Home is what the title of the next experience is. According to Grace, she was or might have been abducted by aliens. Yes, you heard that correctly. Aliens. We're not sure which aliens because she wasn't specific, so we can't know if they were War of the Worlds type aliens, Battle of Los Angeles aliens, alien aliens, Independence Day aliens, Dark Skies aliens, or, well, you get the point. Here's exactly what Grace acknowledged happened while working on the set of Annabelle Comes Home. She said, I woke up one morning and I had this weird small cut near my hairline on my forehead. It was in the shape of a triangle, she said. I was really freaked out and I got really scared because Gary Dauberman, the director, had told me I was abducted by aliens, and I started researching. I literally thought I'd got abducted by aliens. What's even more is while Grace was narrating her set abduction experience, she said a car passed her and had a picture of an alien on it. A coincidence? The writer of the story says, I think not, or maybe, just maybe, Grace isn't really Grace anymore. If you've seen Us by Jordan Peele, you would know what they mean.
Yikes.
Also, Annabelle Comes Home photos and a broken rosary is part of the next part of her tale. She says, according to production notes from Annabelle Comes Home, Grace brought a new instant camera to set to document her experiences and get pictures with stars the likes of Patrick Wilson, Vera Farmiga, and possibly James Wan when he did make the rear appearance. Grace also took photos of the set itself, and one thing stood out. Whenever she would try to capture an image of Annabelle the doll, it always came out black. I brought my camera and I took photos of everyone, And when I would take photos of Annabelle, every time it would come out black. I took a photo of her with two different cameras, and both times it came out black. Every other photo was fine. I thought it maybe was the camera reflecting the case, but I took the photos of her outside the case. Okay, so that's actually disconcerting. No irony there. Grace, however, doesn't mention whether she finally got a photo of Annabelle, this according to the author of the article. Quick question, though. Did this happen before or after the set was blessed? Maybe the lack of a set blessing caused Annabelle to obscure the photos. In the case of the rosary, Grace was gifted a rosary to wear on set. While wearing it one day, the crucifix on the necklace simply fell off and dropped to the floor. She says, I was wearing it, and all of a sudden it just broke. I'd been wearing it all day, and nothing happened. It just broke. It was the strangest experience. There's that. And then other experiences include Grace dishing out on more of her creepy experiences here, such as the safety test run of a scene when a glass case fell over right where she was standing. Also, a witch bottle Grace received as a gift after wrap started heating up out of nowhere. This caused the wax to melt off and burn her hand. A journalist had his own experience with the Annabelle Comes Home set. When the journalist visited the set, his watch went haywire, with it changing time, speeding up, and jumping ahead hours at a time. But when he put it on the next day, the time was accurate, and everything was back to normal. Personally, I don't know if I believe in ghosts or not. I'm torn because there are logical explanations, but there are also things that cannot be explained, Grace continued. While it's easy to be skeptical about such things, the young actress is right. Some things can be explained and others cannot. Whether that is because of Annabelle is yet to be seen. One other important thing to note is that the actress is 12 years old. However, it doesn't mean her experiences should be discounted. It is not rare within Hollywood to have cast members detail their experiences working on a movie set months or weeks before its release. This is a very usual occurrence and done in a bid to garner more hype or anticipation. We can't know if this is the case with Grace, but one thing's for sure, they're all very entertaining stories.
Weird stuff. Yeah, there's been, I think, reports on almost every one of the Conjuring sets. Even Vera Farmiga has chimed in with strange encounters, strange things that she's actually seen and witnessed while filming the series. Very cool. All right, our final news story is here, Tim. Where are we going?
Going to Kansas City, Dave. Kansas City.
Dun, 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 dun.
It's more Kansas City, Here I Come, but I don't think that. I think that's the British deal again.
Yeah, I guess that's your version, I guess.
Yeah. Flying objects in particular, Dave. Flying objects over Kansas City are leaving locals suspecting aliens. Maybe aliens love barbecue, Dave. Maybe that's the deal. Maybe they love the Kansas City barbecue.
There's a question about that?
I don't think there is.
No. Obviously, what are they, animals?
Or they're looking for. Yeah, I think it's the perfect storm here, Dave. They find themselves a nice bovine. They go and they go and gut that thing, and then they go and get them some of that Kansas City barbecue sauce, and they throw it on there and have themselves a good old picnic.
Mm-hmm.
They found the right place.
What's going on?
Well, flying objects over Kansas City on Thursday night sparked the interest of locals for a while, had stumped people into looking for answers. KMBC, the KMBC 9 in Kansas City, it doesn't really flow, Dave, said on Twitter that it had fielded several calls regarding two strange orbs floating over Kansas City International Airport. That could just be a bad boob job, too. A few watchers suspected weather balloons. The National Weather Service in Kansas City was deadpan in its response to that notion. They went on to Twitter and said this: "We honestly have no explanation for the floating objects over Kansas City." That tweet drew more than 600 replies, many of them people suspecting aliens. Adam Steinbaugh put up a nice little gif to that deal. And then Cass Anderson followed up with something from the X-Files. The TV station joined in the speculation and launched a poll to see which would be more intriguing to alien visitors, NFL MVP and Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes or some Kansas City barbecue. Mahomes won, by the way, in that whole deal. In the end, KMBC reporter William Joy appears to have solved the mystery. He tweeted that a spokesperson from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency told him, given the position, it is likely one of their balloons in test flight. According to the website, DARPA's mission is to make pivotal investments in breakthrough technologies for national security. DARPA tweeted on June 18th that it had launched three balloons from Maryland as part of its adaptable lighter-than-air program.
Mm-hmm.
DARPA put out a tweet that said last night, DARPA launched three balloons from Cumberland, Maryland, in a test flight for the adaptable lighter-than-air program. Over the next few days, Alta will demonstrate capability for windborne navigation of a lighter-than-air vehicle over extended ranges. The goal of the adaptable lighter-than-air program is to develop and demonstrate a higher-altitude lighter-than-air vehicle capable of windborne navigation over extended ranges, that the agency said on the website. The balloons can fly at altitudes of more than 75,000 feet. While they do not have independent propulsion, the Alta vehicle is designed to navigate by changing altitude and thus taking advantage of different wind profiles aloft. A state-of-the-art winds aloft sensor, or WAS, is also being developed by the program, which is intended to provide real-time stratospheric wind measurements. There you go.
So not UFOs, maybe UFOs, could be balloons, probably not balloons. We don't know for sure.
DARPA's saying it's a balloon.
I don't buy DARPA's nonsense. I think DARPA's full of carpa. Crappa. Well, that's it for today. We will be back tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. Remember, you can always send me your stories to dave@darknessradio.com, or better yet, call us and leave a voicemail, 651-300-4977. Share your stories, your supernatural encounters right here on Beyond the Darkness.